Will Ellen is the son of a South Carolina sharecropper. His father farmed a small plot of land for extra income, and later the family moved to Maryland. But it wasn't until Will grew up and moved to Belgium that he got bitten by the farming bug. Working alongside Belgian farmers gave Will a new appreciation for natural foods, and he was soon addicted to having his hands in the soil. He kept it up when he returned to the U.S., settled near Milwaukee, started donating his crops to a local food bank as an alternative to canned foods, and he soon realized that many Americans are left without the choice to eat healthy, organic food, and that didn't sit very well with Will. He began planting seeds for Growing Power, a nonprofit organization that educates urban dwellers on farming and gardening methods. It also empowers people in historically underserved communities to create their own access to natural food. Growing Power now operates in Milwaukee and Chicago, but Will's message has gone worldwide. In 2008, he was awarded a MacArthur Fellowship for his urban farming efforts. This week he's in North Carolina as the keynote speaker at the Shared Table Symposium, and it's our pleasure to welcome him to the studio today. Will Ellen, thanks for being on the State of Things.
It's great to be here in North Carolina.
You grew up watching your dad farm, but you didn't get bitten by the bug then. It was going to Belgium
that
day. Well,
I actually grew up in Maryland. My parents migrated to the Washington, D.C. area and right on the border of Rockville and Bethesda, Maryland. We had a small farm. So I have been farming since birth, I always tell people. And when I left the farm at 18, I said never again. Like many rural farm kids, and this was back in the 50s and 60s when I was in school and so forth. So I went away to college, and I was a high school All-American basketball player. I had 100 scholarship offers. I wound up going to the University of Miami in Florida, where I was the first African-American basketball player there in 1967. And my goal was to get an education and play professional basketball. You know, I love playing basketball, and I was able to fulfill those two things. And the latter part of my basketball career, I played my last years in Belgium. And one of my Belgian teammates, I'd been away from farming for, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. One of my Belgian teammates' family had a farm, and I went out and helped them plant potatoes one day, and all of a sudden I had this tremendous urge to, once I touched the earth, and they farmed like we did back home, where they took care of the land, they composted, they didn't use any chemicals, so it kind of reminded me, and I must have had this hidden passion that came out at that time, and I wanted to farm, so I asked the team that I played for to get me a place out in the country, so I got 25 chickens, and I had a big garden, and all of a sudden, here I was, back doing what I did when I was growing up. And a lot of the food that I grew was for my family. I had three young children. And I also supplied food for some of the American players that played in the Belgian Professional League. And they would come to my house, and we'd have these food celebrations the same as we did back home at our home as I was growing up. So here I was reliving my childhood, but really enjoying it.
Well, did it all come back to you, or were you learning? Did you have to learn new techniques or learn all over again?
Well, farming is a constant learning piece. I knew a lot from my childhood, but even today, after farming for over 50 years, I still every day are learning new things, trying to be innovative, trying to grow more intensively, trying to compost and get more energy into the soil so we can grow more intensively, because we've lost a lot of farmland in this country, and we lost a lot of farmers, and more people are moving into cities or close to cities, so we got to figure out how we're going to grow all this wonderful local food on less acreage, but more intensively.
Well, when you use that word intensively, it's a dirty word to people in the sustainable agriculture business, but you mean it in a different way. There's ways to intensify the outputs without using the kind
of systems. We're talking about on small spaces, being able to grow and compost and vermicompost, and being able to take a space and maximize a space, taking, say, a 2,000 square foot greenhouse and turn it into, 3,000 square feet of growing, using vertical farming, growing not on one plane, but growing on multiple levels, going into the ground, doing aquaculture, aquaponics, being very creative, using renewable energy as a piece. So the farms that we operate are not like my father's or grandfather's farm where we're doing row crops, or it looks like something you see today. And as you cross Iowa or Nebraska, where you have intensive row crops right. of soybeans, corn, and that sort of thing. This is a different, this is about edible food grown in small spaces, but being able to produce at, say, $5 a square foot, which equates to about $200,000 an acre, or when you grow sprouts, you're getting over $50 a square foot, wow. which is equates to over $1 million an acre. Mm-hmm. But to do that, you have to, again, have the energy in the soil, and that comes from taking food waste and carbon waste and turn it into high-nutrient compost and using worm castings and so forth. So that's what we've been able to do in Milwaukee. We have over 200 acres of production in the city and right outside of the city in Milwaukee, and able to grow a lot of food to be delivered to everybody in the city, not just a certain segment of society.
Well, let me talk about that for a moment. The everybody part has always been the sticky part for sustainable agriculture. It costs a little more to produce that food, we're told, and so it's not always available to lower-income families. Have you been able to do that, and how?
Well, we made it available because of our system, our integrated system. In fact, we're able to get our food to just about everybody in different delivery systems. In other words, we have a year-round CSA program called Market Basket. We can drop food in any community. Now we're starting to build out stores in food deserts, like 2,000 square foot stores. We're going to open one in the biggest food desert in Milwaukee. We're able to put in gardens at new housing projects. We're designing a garden in the inside of the largest housing projects at five blocks away from our farm. We're in a food desert area where our national headquarters, you have to travel over 3 miles to get to a retail grocery store for thousands and thousands of people. So,
and the prices are competitive then?
Prices are competitive because we grow our own inputs. This year we'll compost 22 million pounds of food and carbon into high-quality compost, and we crank out over 100,000 pounds of worm castings every 4 months. So we're able to grow our own inputs and have our own systems that, and we take away that travel cost,
travel
transportation
cost
yeah. of food. So you're able to get your prices to where conventional pricing. I think a lot of the organic food is artificially inflated. It really doesn't cost $4 to grow a tomato. So
you can get it down. So give us an idea of the landscape now. Where are these plots in this food desert that you describe in places like Milwaukee and Chicago?
Well, we have Chicago, for example, where we have five farms. There's 33 square miles of vacant land, 77,000 vacant lots. In Milwaukee, there's thousands of vacant land and buildings, because one of the things that we're doing is aquaponics, growing tilapia and lake perch inside buildings, vacant buildings, and there's lots and lots of vacant buildings. So any space that we can find that's a secured space, we can put up hoop houses, or as you all call them in the South, high tunnels, to be able to grow food. And we use renewable energy to do that. We used compost to heat those structures to be able to grow about 40 different types of greens during the wintertime. And and using renewable energy, we produce about a quarter of our electricity with solar panels. 70% of our water is heated by an internal solar system that we have for heating to making hot water. So, and we're working on an anaerobic digester that we're going to build, a large anaerobic digester in the city.
So and that is what?
That's taking solid food waste, and you grind it into a slurry, and you suck it into a tank, and you create acetic acid, and then you change the bacterial structure of that to a high pH and put it in a methane digester, produce methane that'll run a generator.
Wow.
So we've done testing with that over 2 years, and working with the University of Wisconsin Green Bay Microbiology Department as our partner. And now we're ready to build out a full-scale system. So we're working on these kind of innovative ways of creating energy, because without solving this energy problem with agriculture, prices are going to continue to go.
Well, it's all a lot cheaper than using oil. We'll talk more about the ability to scale this up and how it plays out in the Triangle in North Carolina when I return with my guest, Will Allen, co-founder and director of Growing Power, a sustainable agriculture nonprofit in Milwaukee. Our conversation continues just ahead. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. My guest, Will Allen, co-founder and current director of Growing Power, a sustainable food nonprofit based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He's in North Carolina this week to participate in the Shared Table Symposium at UNC and Duke. Well, I want to get a little more of your backstory, too, because you talked about getting your hands in the dirt in Belgium and deciding that this is what you wanted to do. When did you make the connection between what was now your bliss, this joy of just growing food, and the whole sustainable part of it and spreading the word to other people?
Well, I never planned to be even sitting here talking to you today. It was never, I had this master plan to do what I'm doing today. It kind of evolved. Once I got back to the States, I started farming. I also had a off-farm job with Procter & Gamble and sales technology. So I had these kind of two full-time jobs. I was working a lot of hours, and as my kids were going through school, and I bought the last remaining farm in 1993, and that's when I left Procter & Gamble and decided to go just farm 100% of the time. And it was for selfish reasons, quite frankly, to sell my farm produce. I got up to 100 acres in a town outside of Milwaukee called Oak Creek, Wisconsin. And I found this wonderful place on one of the busiest streets in Milwaukee that separates two freeways, I-43 on the east, which goes to Green Bay, and I-41-45 on the west, and we're halfway between and five blocks away, the largest public housing project, and this whole area was a food desert. So I started growing food, and I started hiring kids from the neighborhood and really got engaged in the community that way. People got to know who we were, and we're growing pretty predominantly African-American community, so we're growing a lot of crops, culturally appropriate crops for folks that migrated from the South years ago. And so we got engaged to the point that we were looked at as an asset to that local community. Then we started getting some attention from the rest of the community, the politicos and corporate companies in it. So over the 18 years, we've grown along a continuum from just me starting and volunteering, but it started with working with youth. And we're one of the only multicultural, multigenerational organizations in the country of our size led by a person of color doing this work. So this multiculturalism is really important to us in terms of the diversity of the people that come to our trainings today, and now we have over 20 farms and over 100 employees. But it's been a growth along, a steady growth for our organization, and an accelerated growth after 2000.
Well, you talk about diversity, and I suppose you mean along racial and ethnic lines, but then there's a lot of the people who are doing the work are from urban areas, is that right, who may have had no experience farming before. Is it a steep learning curve? Is it a tough cultural change to make?
You know, I always say you can't learn how to farm in a classroom. You have to do it in a very hands-on way, and that's what we do. We teach hands-on training. I mean, we have these workshops. We do workshops from January through June. People from all over the country, all over the world come. And it's real diversity and all different. Folks come from rural communities. Folks of all colors and creeds and so forth. So we really embrace that. We make that happen. We create the environment to make that happen. And our staff is made up of just about every kind of person you can think of, our 100 employees. And that's really important. that we're the face of the people that we're working with that come to our trainings and live in our communities and so forth.
But how tough is it for kids, say, who have grown up in an urban environment to suddenly, you know, get their hands in the dirt? And farming's hard work. It's a very different kind of work than they've been exposed to.
Well, I think along the continuum, like I said, back in the day, what we found is when we work with kids in the city, they've never done this, but they're very interested because they don't have much to do. So especially the ones, we start our kids at like 8 years old. So between the ages of 8 and 12, they're very curious and they want to get involved. And many of our kids now that we work with, some of them are over 30 years old now, and a lot of them work on our staff, have gone to college. We've helped them get into universities across the country and help fund their education, and now they're back working for us in the community. And that's what everybody always talks about. You know, you go away to college, but come back to your community and give back something, and that's something that is truly happening. Today, the movement has gone, I call it the Good Food Revolution, which is a title of my book that'll be released in May. It's about young people today. Under 40, when you look at it, it's over 60% of the folks that are now involved in the food system, and over hundreds of categories of jobs, thousands of jobs will be produced. But these young people are now under 40, which is pleases me. And the other thing that pleases me is the fact that many of these young people are people of color. Because 15 years ago, when I would go into communities, people would say to me, "Will, why are you doing the slaves work? We don't want to do this." But I don't hear that today. And to a large part, the First Lady has played a huge role. And she put the small garden on the White House lawn, which was originally only 1,200 square feet. 10 million new people started growing food for the first time. Many of those were people of color. So people have come back and they realize because of our health situation and obesity, childhood obesity in this country, and we need to eat healthier.
Well,
we need to eat local food.
And not to mention the high cost of cheap food because of all the subsidies that go into it, hidden costs that we pay every day as taxpayers but don't see at the checkout shelf. So there's a lot of reasons for moving more people into farming and to see a lot more sustainable agriculture, more acreage, and more output. But is it scalable? I mean, how big can it get? Can we, let me ask the question this way. Do you think we can get to the point where we can actually feed ourselves entirely using these sustainable
methods?
Well,
it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, for us to fundamentally change the system we have now, we'd probably need about 50 million new people growing food in their communities all over the country. But we can, along a continuum, go back to the days, because remember, back in the 30s and 40s, every state pretty much fed itself. 85% of food that was eaten by Iowans was grown in the state of Iowa, now only 15%. So those integrated farms are gone. Now we see soybeans and corn and large factory hog farms and things like that. So we need to get back to the days of where we grow our own food. We've never had a food crisis like we have today. We have more hunger in the world than ever before. And our industrial food system was supposed to solve that, but it didn't solve that. And for the first time in March, the UN said the only way to end world hunger is local food systems. And I think we know that. It's hard to get there, but people are working on it today. And to scale this up, we have to have concrete projects and concrete ways of showing our policymakers that it can be done. And that's what we've done in Milwaukee. Our mayor is very much behind it. Our politicos are behind it. Every time we can raise chickens in the city now, bees in the city now. We can farm in every zoning area, industrial, commercial, and residential in the city of Milwaukee. Aquaculture is a huge thing that we're working with the Great Lakes Institute to be able to grow millions of fish, lake perch, and different types of fin fish, and we're doing research on that because we're going to have to grow our own food in these communities for us to survive in the future, because more people are moving into cities worldwide. I think more people now live in cities than in rural areas because of the harsh conditions and no food and water and so forth. So and we have to be innovative, and we need this new crop of young, I don't even know if we call them farmers, because they are going to be taking on, not everybody's going to be digging in the soil. Mm-hmm. We need people to, medical people, dietitians, we need renewable energy people, we need planners and land and architects and so forth, because some of the cities will have to go with vertical farms, buildings mm-hmm. that'll we're building the first vertical farm in the world at our place. It's going to be a five-story building growing on every floor.
And what kinds of crops? Are they going to be traditional crops, or are we talking about lichens and various sorts of?
Well, they're going to be multiple crops.
Yeah.
You know, we just, the building is, it's about a $12 million building that we're fundraising mm-hmm. for right now. But it'll be a template. It'll be something we can quantify before we go off and start building these 50-story, 100-story buildings, because we have a lot of cities that don't have a large land mass like Detroit or Milwaukee or Youngstown, Ohio, or the industrial cities that have thousands of acres. We don't have that in New York or Boston or San Francisco and cities like that.
Well, why not? You've had enormous success at this yourself. Is it catching on? Are there more Will Allens out there? Is that what it's going to take to make this scalable and to see more of it?
Well, we need to grow more, as you say, Will Allens or whatever. Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's just not going to happen. People have to be passionate about. Farming is an occupation that you really have to have a lot of passion, because you have a lot of trials and tribulations, and to persevere, you really have to have passion. So I wish we could grow passion like we do beans or sprouts or something.
Well, are you seeing it? Are you seeing more of it?
Yeah. I mean, it's. I was just last week at the Georgia Organic Conference, and I remember a few years ago, it was only a couple hundred people. There were 900 people at that conference, and it was pretty much maxed out. So everywhere I go, these large throngs of people, they want to get involved. They want to be a part of this. It's an important thing. Food is the most important thing in our lives. It's the one thing that connects all of us, the fact that we have to eat food. And my thing has always been, why don't we eat good food? Because we take medicine. Everybody takes medicine 3 times a day, and it's our food. Some of us take good medicine. Some of us take bad medicine. So our food is, if you look at the 3 pillars of nutrition, call it nutrition, exercise, and stress management, nutrition is probably 2/3 of the puzzle. If we could get that piece right, we'd have a healthier country, wouldn't have half the diseases that we have. And we're great at fixing us after we get sick. I mean, we have the greatest healthcare system after the fact. We're not very good.
And the most expensive. Go ahead.
Yeah. Very expensive, you're right. But we don't have a very good preventative system. And the preventative system is those 3 pillars, with nutrition being 2/3 of the puzzle, I think.
You know, you said something interesting a couple of times. You talked about integrated systems, and that always used to mean, you know, the animals do what they do in the barn, and you scoop that up, and you put that on the crop, and around the cycle
right.
goes. But now, when you talk about integration, you're bringing in a lot more science and technology. It seems to me like you can involve a lot more people in what used to be called farming because of solar technology, reuse, the idea
right.
of creating your own fuels. This opens up whole new fields in whole new areas in what we used to call farming.
Right. Well, we're having a conference in September in Milwaukee. It'll be 3,000 people. It's called the National International Urban and Small Farm Conference. It's the second one. We're going to have it every 2 years. And there's 17 different tracks. It involves everything that we do in our society. There are medical tracks. There are educational tracks. There are architects and urban planning track. There's farm tracks. There's renewable energy track. There's a political track, a track for corporate companies, because it's really important for us to look at this a different way and get everybody at the table. Everybody, what I call the good food revolution table, we need everybody there. We can't afford anymore to kick away people that we said, we're not going to work with those folks, because a lot of times they bring a piece that we need to make this work. We have to think beyond sometimes our idealism and look at the folks that are really suffering in this country, because everybody wants to have a sustainable community, but without a sustainable food system, all these 2020 plans that you hear to make their cities green and sustainable will never happen. without a sustainable
food system.
And so
here it is, 2012, and you've managed to push farming into the third generation of the Allen family. Your daughter is now running the Growing Power in Chicago, right?
Yeah, she went away to college to be an artist. She's a pretty great artist. Went to the Art Institute, got a degree in art, a master's in art therapy. But in 2000, she grew up on a farm. She wanted to. I did a workshop in Chicago that she came to, and she asked me if she could get back into it and create something in Chicago. Now we have five farms in Chicago and that are working very well in a city that badly needs healthy food, and a city that needs jobs, and a city that needs to engage the youth. They have one of the highest high school dropout rates in the country. To create employment, because I think, like you said before, this new food system is about creating different categories of jobs and thousands of jobs. And it's kind of under the radar screen in that respect, that people start thinking about jobs, but we're paying living wages to these folks that work for our organization. So we're setting this, we have to prove, we have to cash show that this type of farming cash flows. That's one of the things. Like I said, right now we're 200 acres of production. We're going to double that this year. We're delivering food to everybody you can think of, from Cisco to Walmart to many, many accounts, over 50 restaurants in Milwaukee, Chicago, Madison, Wisconsin. And we have 15 regional training centers around the U.S., and that's the way we spread. We're going to be able to spread what we do to these regional training centers that apply to become regional training centers. We're going to have one here in North Carolina at the food shuttle. So we'll be coming here doing trainings, regional trainings with the food shuttles to help them develop their infrastructure so that they can grow more food and they can be the training center for folks in North Carolina to learn how to do this farming, because this is a very skilled kind of, when you grow this integrated farm system, the intensive production, you have to develop some skill sets. It's not your grandfather's kind of row crop farming.
Will, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Will Allen is director and co-founder of Growing Power, a nonprofit based in Milwaukee, going to be speaking at Shared Table Symposium tonight at 7 o'clock, Reynolds Theater, on the campus of Duke University. That's our program. Thanks for listening to The State of Things. You can go to our website, stateofthings.org. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.